Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello, and welcome to Scrappy ABM, your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today's going to be a very special episode because I'm actually joined by Trevor Grimes, who is the lead content strategist at Scrappy ABM. If you've been following me on LinkedIn, I've been touting that I have a bunch of team members, but I'm excited to start to show some of these awesome people off. So if you end up working at Scrappy ABM, you get to work with Trevor. So Trevor, thank you for joining me today.
Oh yeah, thanks Mason. Thank you for asking me. I've been wanting to be on it for a while, and I guess the trick was to become like your employee.
Right.
That was like that was the way in.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And what I'm really excited to talk through today is we have obviously been talking through a lot of different Scrappy ABM programs for over 50 episodes at this point. I think one of the unique differentiators for the approach that we take to an ABM program is a lot of ABM programs are very ad heavy. We are very content heavy. So I'm excited to dig into your thoughts around content repurposing, especially in the context of getting an ABM program off the ground. I think there's a huge opportunity to take your existing content assets, repurpose them through your target account list, and then go to market that way. So Trevor, as we dig into a content repurposing playbook, can you go ahead and give us the super high level of what we'll be digging into today?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, like most ABM, or at least our ABM playbooks are very content heavy. And so with everything going on with the economy, like we're seeing people being laid off left and right, and people are slashing marketing budgets and letting agencies go. I think the big thing about this is that it really gets the most juice out of the squeeze, right? So if you're paying an agency, you're paying somebody internally, whatever, you're creating one or two pieces of content a month and then pushing them out there and forgetting about them, you're not getting your money's worth. And if you're an agency or a marketer doing this, you're also not showing your value in this by doing that. So the gist of this is we're going to talk about how do you take one piece of content and how can we like turn existing content into multiple pieces. And then also how can we create new content with the thought in mind that I'm going to use this in multiple different places.
And I love that. And I'm a good friend of Justin Simon. He actually just did a breakdown of our existing content strategy over here at Scrappy ABM. Talk through the concept of distribution first. So when you go to create a piece of content, do you go ahead and think through every other content asset that you'll develop out of this one content piece? And thinking about it from a distribution first perspective. So I want to actually start there. As you think about, okay, we're going to create this new content asset, how are you starting to map out on the onset, here are all the ways we're going to use this content asset?
Yeah. So let's just start with a blog, because I feel like that's most people, when they think of content, like they think of a blog right off the bat. And if you're building out the template for this blog, like you're probably thinking of, you've got a topic, maybe you got some questions, you've got like a header, and then you start going through and putting out your smaller headlines and things like that and building it from there. At least that's how I typically do it, is get all the big stuff out of there and then fill in the gaps. So if I was just going to create this with the idea of this is going to live on our website and maybe people will look at it, I might not put a lot of time into digging deep for like stats, putting in pull quotes if they came from, like if the blog was based on like an interview with somebody, turning that into frequently asked question type things. I might not think about those things. I might just be thinking, I need to just explain each one of these things, throw in a call to action at the end or whatever, and put it on the blog, and that's the end. And then we'll send out an email about it, and we'll post about it on LinkedIn once or twice, and that'll be it. And that's like where content dies. So thinking about it from the realm of I'm going to turn this into multiple pieces, I'm going to be looking a little bit deeper, spending a little more time, or asking a little more questions around specifics like stats in particular, which are great for turning into either an infographic or like carousels on LinkedIn or Instagram or whatever. Those stats are great for like quick, punchy intros for like short videos. Or again, all those things, like just if each paragraph has each section had like a stat, and you've got three or four sections in this blog, well, you've already got three or four pieces of content you've created that you can just take that stat and put it on a static image and post it. And then you can have somebody turn those into a video where they talk through it. And also as I'm writing or as going through it, a lot of times headlines for like subheaders and stuff for blogs can be a little bit too long for the blog itself. I want to trim those down, but those are good to take those longer pieces of things that I've had to trim down and use those for, again, those are good intros for a video. Like I can speak through a longer headline real quick that's punchy and grabs attention in a video versus what needs to be a little bit shorter, three or four or five words for a blog headline. But that's how I'm mapping that out. I'm asking those, if I'm interviewing somebody for the blog, I'm asking those deeper questions so I can get some more of those stats. Can I reference these kind of things? And if you're lucky enough that you've got the person of contact or whoever is you're interviewing the information for this blog, if you can get good questions out of them that you can turn into quotes, that's more things. If you can turn that into frequently asked questions that you could throw in to, and when you get into frequently asked question, that goes even more, like it just starts exploding from there. Frequently asked questions can be like a complete blog on their own. They could be a complete email on their own. Like it goes off from there. But if I get those kind of things, I can start putting the questions that I asked this person in this blog. If it's a big enough question, it can go on the homepage of the website or on a landing page that links back to that blog or leaks to another piece of content. So just going from that one blog that we've had, like I've listed off five or six other things that you can do, but that's how I start thinking about it. It's not just about writing this blog and hitting a word count or whatever. It's what information can I pull from this? If it, like I said, a lot of the blogs I write come from interviews that people send me over where they just ask the person a question. I understand that was a very valuable person's time. Like it took a lot of time for them to find even 30 minutes to answer these questions. So how can I take the five or six questions that they took the time to answer and really get the most out of it?
Yeah. Again, I love that you referenced even in a blog, it's generally coming from an interview. So when you really think through a content repurposing program, I really love the idea of using a podcast as the mechanism for your input information. And then if you're going to translate that into a blog, you just take the upfront research that you would do for a blog to form the questions. And then you just ask a series of questions that form your subtopics and your subheaders in your blog. Each one of those subheaders is a social post. You addressed it in the podcast interview already. So you've got social clips. If you do some good upfront research, like you said, you can take stats and turn those into very clear and simple infographics or just simple images that you can post on social. So again, I'd be curious to hear, but from my perspective, when I've done this in the past, like you get one long form video, probably 3 to 5 short form clips. You get a blog, you get upwards of 8 to 12 written social posts, not to mention the sheer number of emails you can send between blog, podcast. And even if you do the podcast, it's a live stream podcast, you can promote registering for the podcast and registering for the webinar or whatever that needs to look like. And you just end up creating upwards of 20 to 25 different assets when you really start to map out all the different ways that you can repurpose the existing content assets that you have.
Yeah. I love that the ones you listed off, especially you said 10 to 12 social posts. Think about how many people struggle to just be consistent with social media. And if you're lucky enough to already have a podcast or just have somebody that you can talk to once a week that you work with, ask them some questions. If you get 20 minutes with your CMO or with your CFO or whoever that you want to get that information from, if you can spend 20 minutes with them, like you said, build it up, do the research like this is going to be a podcast. And I'm saying this for people who don't have podcasts, because you can just go take some office time and go in there, act like you're going to interview them and do interview them. And obviously it's not you won't have the social clips to post out, but that's 10 to 12 like images or text based posts that you can put out there. And for people who are struggling to come up with one or two things to say a week, you just knocked out 10 to 12 of those. Yeah. And then again, countless emails that can go out about it and talk about it before, tease it, talk about the day of, give all the information afterwards. There's a lot of things you can go from just that one thing. You're not even promoting your what you're selling exactly or what your services is. You're filling up your 80% educational quota with, if we're going by the 80-20 rule of education selling, like you're filling up your quota with that. And yeah, you're positioning yourself as a thought leader just from that one thing.
And I even love the idea, because I've never thought about it this way, because one of the pushbacks that we get around the concept of, like, you should build a podcast, it's, I'm not great on camera, I'm really nervous to be recorded. You could take those internal interviews and just record them. And again, never publish them necessarily, like publish them in secret, but I just mean showcasing, hey, subject matter expert, hey, CFO, we just did 8 interviews with you over the past 2 months. We recorded every interview. You were incredible on them. You can listen back to them, but would you mind if we launch this as a podcast? And then we can start to do a weekly series. You're already doing it. Now we just have to actually distribute the information that you're already sharing.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a great way to start to get buy-in and ease somebody into building a podcast.
Yeah. So I actually did this at this exact setup at a previous place that I'd worked at. It wasn't like building up to be a podcast, although it would have been really nice if that would have happened. But my goal was just like, can we have as much like video content as possible with people who are not used to being on video. They're super busy. If I can get 30 minutes of their week, just every few weeks or whatever. And that's what I did. I set up a camera. If you don't have a camera, use your phone or a voice recorder or whatever works best, but set up your phone and just talk with them and ask them questions. And you don't have to worry about writing anything down because you're recording it. Just focus on the conversation. And usually if you ask a question, let somebody just keep going on, they start getting into really good information that becomes, again, you're getting topics for future stuff, and you're also just getting some really good thought leadership and personality, which is like a big thing. Like, we want to show the personality of these people. Take that, cut it up. Like, here's, I know you don't want to be on video. I know you don't want to have this out there, but this is really cool. You talked about a lot of really cool things, and the position I was in, I was interviewing the C-suite because the C-suite was off in this other hallway that you had to use a key card to get access to. So they didn't feel very accessible. And they wanted to get rid of that image. They wanted people to know they're totally accessible. Like, they're going to leave their door open, you can walk right in. So to do that, like, we need to try and show people that. And that was the goal of that. But yeah, if you don't have a podcast, or somebody doesn't want to or doesn't have the time, start by just doing that. I'm just going to record our interviews so that I can get a lot of good content. And I don't have to worry about writing. I just want to be able to talk to you. And soon, if you do that for a few weeks or a few months, you have a podcast and it's, hey, you look really good on this. What if we posted it? So I just reiterate everything that you said, but I had a real life example that kind of
went out. I love that. So that's, if you're thinking about it strategically on the front end of like, how do you create a content asset that then gets repurposed into a variety of mediums? And again, to bring this to an account-based perspective, just for a quick moment.
Yeah.
If you do a podcast or you interview somebody, there are two ways of doing this that I really love, of interviewing your target accounts on the show and actually creating content with them. Because if you think about it, if you create 20 content assets, you've created 20 positive touch points that you distribute around your target account, showcasing how amazing they are. Who's not going to like you after that? So again, if you're trying to build great relationships, that's a huge opportunity. And then the other thing is just to build your own industry authority and credibility by inviting other heavy hitters in your industry. Selfishly, that's what I unintentionally did for a couple of years. And when you put your face up against this face of a bunch of other really influential people, just associate you and assume that you're also somehow smart and influential. Yeah. So again, just the association of enough reps of being next to heavy hitters allowed me to build a bit of a personal brand and help me grow a company. So I love those two plays as a very simple and easy way of actually getting something off the ground. Sorry, go ahead, Trevor.
No, I was just saying that's a really good point. And I think you could take that, anybody listening who's trying to figure out how to get this to go in their own work, I think it's like cool. I think most people would love if the company they worked for had a cool podcast, or they had like somebody who was being the thought leader for their company, or in a way where they could like point to them and be like, yeah, this guy or this person is very active and they're doing a lot of cool things. So I think that's a cool play where you're like, how about if I just get this guy to interview the people that I want, that they aspire to be like, and soon they become that, because it's like the proximity principle, right? Of where you're like, you're the five people you hang out with the most. But that's a good like way to like do it for yourself, but also do it for somebody else. Hey, we could get a podcast started. I know you you maybe not haven't wanted to do that, but we're going to interview like some of the people in our space who are doing it and learn from them. And it's going to be like really interesting. And then before long, that person has become him. That's become that person.
Yeah. No, I love that. The other approach, which is honestly, as we're helping a lot of our clients build ABM programs, is they didn't think about this on the front end of how do I repurpose all these different assets, but they have some level of a content inventory. Trevor, I'm curious from your perspective, how would you recommend somebody think through their existing content inventory to repurpose it to help get an ABM program off the ground?
Yeah, I think the first thing, and this is something that I learned from you that I think is a really cool angle that I never really thought about, was like really taking advantage of what could be FAQs that can go on a homepage, that can go on a landing page for a specific product, and linking those FAQs to a blog that explains those. I think that's a really good way to and I guess that's not really, in a way it is repurposing, because if you can find a blog that explains FAQ, you repurpose that as an FAQ, and then it goes, and that's getting more deep into like content binging. But the easiest thing to do really is just to take a, like an inventory of everything that you have. So like what I like to do it in a spreadsheet or whatever you feel most comfortable with, but just go through and start putting all of your content in one place. So you know where it's at, every blog, case study, video, if you have, whatever you may have, just put it all in one place and start going through it. And one of the first things that kind of happens is just by getting that and getting familiar with all the titles, first of all, you realize what you have. So whether you're the person that's been writing it or you're new, it's just a good way to get back in the mindset of seeing what you have, looking at all those titles, and you're like, oh, this title could honestly be another blog on its own, or this blog could be split into two. That's what I see a lot of times, where I'm like, these two blogs answer two different questions. It would be great if we put these two together to create a bigger one that answers this one question that then becomes an FAQ. That's something I'm dealing with right now, where it's, if we're going to be sending out an email about something, we want to give people one place to land on where everything is answered. And these two blogs do great, but we need it to be one piece. That's one way. I just turned those two blogs into another blog that I really don't have to do a lot with. I can just copy and paste to make them work together and finesse it a little bit. So I've already turned that into another piece. But so putting everything in a place where you can just see it and go through and look, and you don't even have to go through and start reading every single piece, but just see where it falls on your customer journey, right? Like what is like missing between those? Are there questions being answered and then questions not being answered? Is this blog or this case study answering all these great questions? And it's like, how do we get the most out of it? That's what I'm always looking for. How can I get the most out of each thing? And I know that sounds like overly simplified, but really it's just looking at what you have and thinking, could the title of this blog be a title of a podcast? Does this piece of content have a lot of stats in it that I could turn into other things? Or if you've got a campaign specific goal, which is usually what I'm doing when I'm doing like a content audit, I'm looking for pieces of content that work in that campaign specifically. And then it's okay, great. We've got five blogs that talk about the subject and we've got one case study. What we really need is XYZ for this campaign. It might be some infographic one pagers that people can download quickly. We're just going to put them in the body of the email, or just some graphics that we can create that can put in the body of the email. Just taking a stat from a blog and putting it in the body of an email, and then taking that same image you just created and putting it on LinkedIn or Facebook or wherever your people hang out. Those are all things that can be done super quickly, like without the need to record or whatever. But I think it really, the big thing is look at what your campaign goal is. If you're just looking to repurpose everything, then put everything in a spreadsheet, look at it, start reading titles, start making notes, putting ways to, how could I turn this into this? Or how could this be turned into something else? It's really just about finding those gaps. What do we have a lot of? What do we not have a lot of? And what can I create from what we already have to fill in those gaps?
Yeah. And again, I want to really heavily reiterate what you mentioned earlier of taking full inventory and then mapping that up against the buyer's journey. I don't know that we've talked about on the show the concept of the account progression model, which is awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, re-engagement, and then opportunity. But if you don't understand what content you have that lives at those different stages of your account progression model, then it's gonna be really difficult to understand where you can repurpose. And one of the other things that we've talked about previously is the idea that really to repurpose a general piece of content into an industry specific piece of content probably requires you to change about 20% of the information. And to add maybe a little bit of additional context that's like how this is specific for this industry and the nuances that are specific for that industry, you can take generalized problem content and get more specific and nuanced, and then just change up the title. Trevor, at a previous job, I did this where we just took our same content strategy, and instead of calling it like content strategies for B2B companies, we called it content strategies for rapidly scaling companies. It's the exact same information. We just framed it a little bit differently. And who showed up for that webinar?
Rapidly scaling companies.
Rapidly scaling companies.
Yeah.
So it's just the title and how you frame up the information. So again, taking full inventory, mapping that up against a buyer's journey. And then, as you said, when you get campaign specific, really digging into, okay, for this campaign, these are now the gaps that remain. Is there any existing content that we could repurpose to fill in these gaps? And if not, also, we know where we need to go create net new content. So we've talked a lot around strategy and tactics. What I want to dig into would just be some of the technology. Like, what tech would you recommend to actually make something like this happen?
Yeah, it just depends on where you're at in your marketing journey. Some of us have done all the things and some of us have done a few things. But if you're the person who's in charge of this, if you're leading this initiative and which I think a lot of us who have worked in, especially in-house marketing, you end up being the one hat, like you're wearing all the hats, you're the one person. Yeah. Taking it from just a super basic standpoint, if you've got existing content out there, you're going to start repurposing some of these things. Do you need images? Unsplash and Pexels, like PEXELS, are great, free. Sign up for both of those because they show you better pictures when you sign up for some reason. They're all free. Great. You can literally type in. I use those for so many things in very industry specifics. If you need images just to use to have, there you go. That's free. Canva also is a great tool to use if you're not super design oriented or you don't have a designer on your team or you don't pay for the Adobe suite or whatever. That's a great, just take that and look up stats, a template for stats, type in your stats, put it on, create a carousel out of it or whatever, put it out there. If you're getting into the video space, I get a little bit more deep into this, but honestly, and you talked about this before on the previous episode, which was account-based biking, how easy it is to record with your phone. Like, your phones are very good. Like, already, I think I have an iPhone 12, but things have gotten better, but it's like, I can't tell the difference. Like, my eyes can only see so many pixels. So use your phone, buy a cheap lapel mic from Amazon for $15. If you want to, I actually think if it turns into more of a thing, like getting a mirrorless Sony camera, like ZF models are like, you can find them for $200-ish on like eBay. They're really good. They shoot in 4K. You can hook up external mics to them. So that's a little bit, and that's actually what I use for a lot of stuff because it's a super cheap camera that shoots in 4K and it's mirrorless. So it's just very easy to, very user-friendly for somebody who's never used a camera before. But, you know, that I've done that setup before where I was interviewing somebody and we were outside or windy, or we were just in like a conference room of a hotel, had that camera set up, had a cheap ring light. That's actually what I'm using right now. It's like a $15 ring light from Amazon. Again, I'm just like keeping things very cheap and simple. Took the cheap lapel mic, plugged it into my phone, turned on the voice recorder. I, you know, put the mic on their shirt and put my phone in their pocket and recorded. And that was how we made a lot of video. So you can get very like expensive with it, but you can be super scrappy with it as well. I've done some very like scrappy things in the past to make things work, especially in the beginning. You probably need some proof that this is going to work before your company wants to invest, or before you want to invest a lot in it. You probably already have a phone. Get a $15 tripod, get a $15 ring light, and get a $15 lapel mic. And if you're $45 into this and you pretty much got the setup you need, and honestly, the quality is not going to matter as much as the content that comes out of there. Do your best to make the quality look good. You can turn your phone into 4K, record in 4K just to have a little bit extra information to work with. But that's it. Just do that. Record. I think audio is probably the most important. So make sure you have a mic that's a little bit closer so we can understand. But after that, that's it. And I'm sure there's probably tech out there. I guess I could probably suggest like Descript maybe to help turn your videos into vertical. I personally use Premiere Pro, but I'm an Adobe user, so I'm not going to tell people to go and learn to use Premiere Pro, but I've used Descript before and it's super user-friendly. It's super easy to use. So maybe that would be it. And I actually don't know the cost of that. So you might have to like chime in with that, but I'm thinking of how to take
like $15 a month.
Yeah. And actually, honestly, you can use that. That makes, that's super cheap and it makes things, your workflow a lot easier. But if you don't even have that budget, like use iMovie or whatever the Windows Movie Maker is, like you can make it, you can turn videos vertical into that. It's not called Windows Movie Maker anymore. I can't remember what it's called, but you can make videos vertical with that. So that's, those are free if you have a laptop or a computer. So yeah.
Again, I love the, essentially the $45 tech investment. That's a one time, and then $15 a month for Descript, or if you don't even have the budget for Descript, there are plenty of free product-led video editing tools that leverage AI that you can get started with. So
yeah.
I love it. Final couple of quick questions. As you're getting something like this off the ground, what are the roadblocks that people would experience?
The first roadblock is going to be probably just time. If you are an in-house person and you're doing a bunch of other things, you're probably going to, if you're proposing this to your next in line, there's probably like the time, it's going to take some time to go through and do that initial audit of all your content. It's going to take some time to start mapping out what you should. So that's going to be, I think, getting the buy-in from that. And if you are a marketer or an agency who is trying to do this, I think that the roadblock is getting people to be into it, right? Because I don't know, position it where it's, hey, we're going to use what you already have because you might be paying a lot of money for this service, and we're going to take this and run with it. And usually people are pretty happy, but we're also showing the proof of here's what we have. We're doing that audit beforehand. So I would say I think the biggest roadblock is probably going to be time. If you're an agency who's trying to pitch this or trying to do this for a current client, take the time to audit all their things and pitch it to them. And you may just lose that 8 hours of work if they don't like it, but that's going to be the biggest thing. And I think like the second possible roadblock would be if you're pitching this to a client, is they maybe want like shiny new things. Especially if they're an agency hopper, some people are agency hoppers and that's totally fine. You can find out what works for you, but they've had a different agency create different things for them. They probably want you to create new things too. So maybe there's a way to position it where it's, you're secretly repurposing what they already have. And so I think that could be the two biggest things, is how long it might take to do the initial audit, to get everything in place, to get the approval, and getting over the fact that maybe you're not creating like brand new shiny stuff, but you're improving what they already have, or you're getting the most money out of what they may have spent in the past on something. So I think that's probably the two. It really just depends on the angle and who you're working.
Yeah, especially on that roadblock, what we found works really well is just framing it as speed to market. Again, you want to get something in market quickly. The thing that always takes the longest is content. Like, we could turn ads on today, but what are you going to point them to?
Yeah.
So if you have existing content assets, we can repurpose those and it's going to allow you to get into market a lot faster. So I think that framing really helps with those roadblocks that are going to come up around the new shiny object syndrome and the time component. Because especially as we think about an audit is going to take 8 to 15 hours depending on your content inventory. But it's also going to take 8 to 15 hours, a really great piece of content.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where if you can figure out what you have existing, then you can move a lot faster because your time to get new content in market is cut down significantly.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because this could be the one thing that people could take away, is that if they're trying to pitch this, like, it probably take 8 to 15 hours to do an audit, but it probably also take me that long just to write one more blog for you or one landing page. But it's probably going to take that long just to do that. So what if we took the time to see how we could turn all these things into much bigger and better pieces versus this one thing that's going to be sent out in an email and die after that?
Yeah, I love it. As far as results that you've seen, can you give people a picture of kind of some of the results that you've been able to accomplish through this content approach?
As far as results, I would really just say like the biggest thing is showing the value in. I don't think I can give you like a dollar amount that's been saved or been earned, as much as a agency has not lost a client due to not showing, like not being able to do what they need to do. Like, I think the content repurposing side of things is, until you put it into a campaign, and then it's, how do you link that? It's a little bit difficult to give exact numbers, because how do you link the campaign back to content that's been repurposed? But except when you look at it from, again, using like the FAQ question, that's one of those things that I learned from you, is like, FAQs are actually a pretty good thing to have. And so I think to see if it's actually working, looking at heat maps or looking at your analytics and seeing how many people are now going from that FAQ to this piece of content to another piece of content. So I think the as far as results, I don't have anything that's like solid other than we've seen an uptick in people like actually exploring past the 20 seconds of being on the homepage.
Yeah, I think that there's value in that. It's the value of speed to market as well. Of just instead of a campaign taking 6 months to get off the ground, we're able to do it in three because we leverage past content. So I think those components are massive when it comes to results that are tangible. And then final question for you, Trevor, is there any advice that you'd give somebody for getting started with an ABM program?
I think, so my background before starting at an ABM agency way back in the day was not ABM, but as ABM was explained to me, I was like, oh, that's totally what I've been doing this whole time. So I think if you're getting started, you have to turn your mindset off of that. We are trying to do things that are reaching, like a lot of times we get stuck on impressions and it's, I want this ad to have 50,000 impressions or something like that. If you're not showing huge numbers, and I've been there too, working in house where all my numbers aren't green and there are this huge numbers at the end of the week, like I'm in trouble. We've all been there. And what happens if you're like, you're casting a super wide net and a lot of times in the wrong pond. And I think when it comes to ABM, I think the biggest thing, like if you're getting started, whether it's with an agency or you're trying to launch your own, just from the advice of this podcast, is to get in the mindset of, I'm not going to see these super high impression numbers, but what I am going to see are the numbers in people who are actually interested or actually warm already. I think that's always been my goal. And can we enhance engagement organically? Can we improve our ROI like organically? Can we do all these things organically? And then we've built that audience and now we know who to target. And versus, I'm going to start a company tomorrow and I'm going to run ads that are going to get 1,000 impressions and nobody even visited the website. So I think turn off the idea that you need a lot of impressions and turn on the idea that we are being very specific and very focused in this effort. And you are going to get X amount of new clients or versus getting all these impressions. Get rid of the vanity metric. There we go. That's the one thing I should say. Get rid of vanity metrics because we don't really, yes, obviously care about impressions, but that's not what the goal is here. The goal is that we are reaching the people who actually are interested, who may already know you or know the problem and don't know you yet, but we're putting them in the right place to engage with you at a higher level than if we were just casting this big wide net to everybody.
No, I completely agree. Trevor, if people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Oh man, on this little website called LinkedIn, my name is Trevor Grimes. You can find me there. You can probably just scroll through some of Mason's posts. He tagged me in them pretty frequently. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Anything after that, if you're interested in more, just send me a message and I'll decide if I should open up more of my life. Just kidding.
Trevor, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We hope you all enjoyed. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.